Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. First, I want to thank, of course, the European Fashion Heritage Association to invite me, and especially Marco, because, again, yes, because he asked me to come today and to present you my exhibition, the exhibition displayed at the Musée Yves Saint Laurent now. Maybe you have seen it, you have visited it, I don't know. And I want to apologize for my English in advance. So, I hope, but if you don't understand something, please don't hesitate to ask me or to repeat. Maybe a question, why organizing this type of exhibition at the Musée Yves Saint Laurent? Everybody asked me because you are a specialist of Asian art, so maybe you wanted to link your two passions, fashion and Asia. It's not really the case. The idea of this exhibition was born during 2012 when Pierre Berger hired me to be the curator of the exhibition Kabuki, costume of Japanese costume theater. And it is at this moment that I realized that Yves Saint Laurent was fascinated to Asian art. And it was really for me the point where I started to work on fashion, not only on textile history. And it was really interesting for me to discover how Yves Saint Laurent understood Asia. And when I have realized this exhibition, at that time, I was wondering maybe one day we will organize or we can organize this exhibition. So when I joined and arrived in the Musée Yves Saint Laurent 2 years ago to open the museum, I have proposed to Pierre Berger to organize this first thematic exhibition dedicated to Asia. So it was the opposite. It's because Yves Saint Laurent was interesting in Asian art, then I started to interest to Yves Saint Laurent. Sorry, because I'm completely jet lag also, so it's a little bit complicated. So maybe I will read a little bit, it will be clearer. So Yves Saint Laurent offers both a literary and imaginary vision of Asia, because he didn't travel to Asia, not before the Indian collection or the Chinese collection, but after, not for India, but for China. All along his career, he has looked at Indian, Chinese, and Japanese traditional clothing to bring to life high fashion creation. Since his first collection, he has reinterpreted the sumptuous garments from Indian sovereigns, for example, the Mughal emperor. Then the imperial, as you of course know, the imperial, the China autumn-winter 1977 collection inspired by imperial China, for which he gave a theatrical and transformed image of the country. The same year, the creator drew attention to his Asian influences through a new perfume, a new fragrance called opium. And later, he was interesting also to kimono, but we will see. It's a little bit particular for Japan because he has visited Japan. He went to Japan in 1963, so it was very early in his career. So it's a little bit different because I think he delivered a more literal vision of Japan because he knew the country and he went to Japan since 1963. So I have decided to choose this. There is a pointer. No, this poster, because for me it was really a synthesized vision of Asia, with a jacket inspired by China, a skirt inspired by India, and the butterflies of Japan, in a pose that evokes the prince of Suzuki Harunobu, the famous prince of 18th century in Japan. And you can see also that he was inspired in his sketches by the archaic jades come from China. And they have in their collection, Pierre Berger and Yves Saint Laurent, several pieces of Chinese art, especially archaic jade. So, as I told you, Yves Saint Laurent did not travel to Asia. He did not travel at all, except in Marrakech. He went normally twice a year to Morocco to create his collection, because he makes the designs of the collection in Morocco, but he did not travel to Asia except in Japan. So his vision of Asia was based on both reality and fantasy, reality for Japan and fantasy for India and China. You can read it, him. I have been to every country in my dreams. I just have to look at a beautiful book about India and I can draw as if I had been there. That is where imaginations come in. And he says in himself, his best travel, he met it in her coach in the books at home. So the first thing to do, of course, was to find the sources of inspiration from the clothes, because he didn't travel. So among his sources were the many books in the studio, of course, in the couture house, but of course in Rue de Babylone, and the objects. As you can see on this picture of André Perlstein, Yves Saint Laurent is seated behind the Ming Buddha dynasty and a book. Unfortunately, it's not an Asian book, it's a book dedicated to Ingres, but it was the two main sources of his inspiration. Pierre Berger and Yves Saint Laurent had a huge collection of artifacts, and to be honest, the Asian part was not as so important, but they have a few very interesting objects kept in their collection. So, his knowledge of India, first we will start with India, came mainly from his library, because they didn't have objects of Indian art except Mughal arms. So it includes very scientific books, not only books of images of artifacts or painting from India, but truly scientific books that we continue to read today. For example, the historic India or the ancient Indian costume, but he had also the collection of the Calico Museum of Ahmedabad, one of the largest collection of textiles in the world, especially Indian textiles. So, it was important for him to have these books collected because he tried really to understand the culture of India. It was not only an aesthetic approach. It was he tried to really understand the use of the garments and the signification of them, because in this country, especially in India, but it's true also in China, the garments have a particularity symbolism, especially for the statue, the social statue of the person who wore it. Am I clear? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I think I'm not. Okay. So through this reading, because it's he reads also the books, he didn't only watch the picture, we can understand that he tried to find elements, not to copy, but to give a legacy, to give an homage to the rulers of India first, and you can watch on these pictures how on this is Yves Saint Laurent. This is a Nangarhar pyjama that comes from North India, 19th century. I borrowed it from the Musée Guimet. It was easy for me to borrow pieces from Guimet. And you can see how he reinterpret it. You have the shape of the garment. You have the buttons that come from British, that come from England, because in India, you usually close the garment with a belt, not with buttons. And he transported and adapted for a European woman. And he was also inspired by a specific book that you have here on the slide, a book that reproduces the goldsmith Johann Melchior Dillinger depicting the Delhi court on the birthday of the great mogul Aurangzeb, purchased by Frederick Augustus II for his palace in Dresden. You can recognize the inspiration of the garment. This comes from the second collection, Fall-Winter 1962. And the brocaded textiles also was inspired by North India. But it's not brocaded, it's printed. But it's an imitation of the brocaded textiles. Excuse me, because. But the cinema was probably never far from his imagination either. It is easily to see the connection between these garments we have seen in the precedent slide and Greta Garbo in the film Mata Hari. So sometimes the inspiration comes from imagination through cinema, and not only through the books or through the object. Yves Saint Laurent seemed, it's my opinion, but I think it's obvious on this image, seemed to understand that beyond the clichés, clothes occupied a special place in the Indian subcontinent. The role of clothing in India was not simply to hide or to cover the body, but to adorn it like a jewel. And I think he really, really well understood that in all his career, not only in the Indian collection. So when Yves Saint Laurent In India, he understood too that in India you have two garments that exist side by side. Those made from several pieces sewn together, and those made of a single unsewed piece, the very, very known sari, for example. And those made of a single unsewn piece. You can watch it on the slide. In fact, this technical distinction could easily be compared with the two types of haute couture atelier workshop, the tailored and structured garments and unstructured draped dresses, the flou. Because at the beginning in India, this distinction was ritual, because the unsewn garment is considered pure. So it's the clothes of the god. The tailored garments, it's not really pure because you have the intervention of your human hand. So it's for the emperor, it's for the kings. But I think I realized that this distinction is technical, actually. So it was interesting for me also to work on this subject, because I realized that sometimes the distinctions could be explained by ritual or religion, but in fact it's technical. And it's why you have two separate workshops also in India. So when Yves Saint Laurent sewed the different parts of the sari together to adapt it for a European woman, he moved from unsewn to sewn by adapting a traditional garment for European wearers. And I think it's a very interesting approach. So from the Raja tunique, because the press has called it Raja tunique in 1962 collection, to the pyjama, we call it in India pyjama, in France pyjama, the same word, it comes from Persian language, here in the middle of the screen from 1969, to the sari gowns in the 1980s or 90s, to the silk chiffon dresses in saffron, indigo, rose madder in the final collection in 2002, an Indian influence was evident everywhere, all around his career, not only in the 1982 very famous Indian collection. The cut of the garments, the motifs and fabrics, the use of materials and techniques, and of course the accessories and jewelry, as you can see on this slide. The 1982 Spring-Summer Haute Couture collection was the most striking example, especially with his reinterpretation of the turban. Because the turban normally is worn by men as a special place in these unsewn garments. It symbolizes family and financial responsibility and can be tied in a complex fashion to denote the religion of the region, sorry, of origin, the religion or the social and family status. It means that when Yves Saint Laurent wrapped turbans around the model heads, feminizing them with gorgeous ornamentation, it means that women can assume the same responsibility of a man. And it's a very strong symbol in India, truly. You can see it normally, it's worn on the imperial mogul or the Maharaja. Yves Saint Laurent also had a connection with Indian people and especially Indian women through Kirat Young, who was a very famous model of Saint Laurent. She joined the house in 1976 and became one of the couturier's favorites. As well as postcards, she brought him textiles and objects from her trips home. Kirat was a source of inspiration for some of his collection, and she remembered an anecdote. I interviewed her for the preparation of the collection, and when I interviewed her, he explained me that one day, I was returning from a visit to India, and I had bought some ankle bracelets, which I wore all the time. On the day the clothes were being fitted, Yves Saint Laurent noticed the jewelry with little bells, with scotch on the back stockings. The following year, he put ankle bracelets on all his models in the 1983 spring-summer collection. So sometimes the inspiration comes from direct inspiration. For China, it's a little bit different because they had a huge collection of objects. And China inspired Saint Laurent to create his remarkable fall-winter collection of 1977, but not only because he started to be influenced by China in 1969, first with jewelry, because he has created a very particular necklace inspired by the medallion, the lacquered red medallion of China made of lacquered, but also in 1970 with the tunic and trousers completely embroidered by flowers and inspired by Chinese embroidery. But from this China of contrast, Yves Saint Laurent borrowed the robe of the emperors and mandarins depicted in the silk painting in this apartment Rue de Babylone, as you can see on the slide. So he tried not to copy again, but to recreate a dragon dress, a dragon robe inspired by this painting. And we can notice that he knew that the dragon in China had five claws. We said claws? The five claws, sorry. Five claws to symbolize the emperor. So he has read something on that, because you can't invent it. As is typical of traditional Chinese costume, these flowing robes indicate the social status of their wearers, because they constricted the movement of the body, and especially the hand. And in China, this type of costume were only worn by intellectuals and scholars. Headwear and footwear also reflected the owner's social position, and Yves Saint Laurent understood very well that. So his approach was not purely aesthetic, as I told you, and he knew the history of China. I will try to translate the maxim of a Chinese anecdote. In China, it usually said that a man who wore boots will never speak with a man who wore sandals, because they are not in the same world. Is it clear? You understand? Okay. And you can see also that he was inspired for this specific jacket by lacquered boxes. These pieces belonged to Pierre Berger and Yves Saint Laurent, but also by the technique of the jacket, of the Chinese jacket, especially the embroidered called the couchure. The golden couchure. It's a metallic thread sewn on the surface of the textiles. 5 minutes. It passed very quickly, sorry. So the resemblance of some of these figures to moving sculptures, so for example here, sometimes adorned with glittering scales, and it was surely inspired by this statue, belonged to Pierre Berger and Yves Saint Laurent. And we know, based on the manuscript, on the press release of Opium Fragrance, that he knew very well China. For example, he wrote, "The 22 dynasties distill in my veins the 22 essences of the elixir of illusions and mirages that once supported the pillars of their glory. I had to go much further. The treasures of Asia, the wealth of the Far East remain distant, almost unreachable. The Tang, the Song, the Yuan, the Ming, the Qing." So we know that he really wanted to find the atmosphere of creation in China. You can watch on this slide, so I will go very fast, the details of the geometric design that he tried to copy on the jacket. Or he was inspired by the theater. The theater, we can see it. So it means that it's not a truly historical vision of Asia, but he was inspired also by theater. So it's interesting because he was absolutely fascinated by theater. So I think I lose my, sorry. At the beginning of his career, he has hesitated between designing for theater or for fashion. And I think during all his career, he had this very specific inspiration come from theater. It was the case also for Kabuki, and it's why Pierre Berger has decided in 2012 to organize an exhibition dedicated to Kabuki, because they were together fascinated to this theater. And when he went to Japan in 1963, when they come back in 1975, or in 1990, they always went to assist to Kabuki representation. And the kimono of Yves Saint Laurent was absolutely truly inspired by Kabuki. The kimono, of course, and the painting made by Monet, the famous painting, the Japanese. So in the same vein, he has looked at the costume of the kimono, and he reminds always when he was at Kyoto and when he has visited the Gion district, when the courtesan were leaving. And as I told you before, for me, this vision of Japan is less creative because it's more literal, because he has a truly vision when he went to Japan. So it's more, it's less creative, and it's more conform of the kimono we wore in Japan, because as you can see on this, it's a kimono. Yes, he has adapted for women. He removed the belt, the obi, but it's a kimono, the shape of kimono. So to conclude, because so maybe also maybe just I add some images. I think also maybe we can imagine that he was inspired also by Maria Callas, because he was he loved Maria Callas, and the kimono of Madame Butterfly should have been maybe a source of inspiration. And the most part of the object that he has kept in their collection, they bought it in Paris, but for example, in Japan, Yves Saint Laurent bought some pieces in Japan, for example, this foil screen. And, sorry, I passed. Okay, so thanks to his imaginary travels, Yves Saint Laurent delivered throughout his collection a dream vision of four dead countries, tainted by knowledge drawn from both his lectures and a direct approach of the work of art. The designer undoubtedly dived deep in the local tradition, explored the folklore, contorted the clichés to suggest a sublimatic depiction of traditional clothing. The exhibition of object is an exhibition of art where a face-to-face visit with the object is proposed. And we have tried to create this new exhibition and to establish the link between the artifact, the object, and the garment of Yves Saint Laurent. This multi-faced artist created a reconstituted and synchronic vision of an Asia that he has visited only rarely, and where he secretly hoped that he himself would become a source of inspiration, he said, and perhaps a chance to influence, in my turn, one of those foreign civilizations